Welcome to IT the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee. Today we have on the show with us Dr. Brian Miller to talk about co-evolution. Dr. Miller earned a bachelor's degree in physics with a minor in engineering from MIT and a PhD in physics from Duke University. He is a technical consultant for IdeaShares, a virtual incubator dedicated to bringing innovation to the marketplace, and serves as research coordinator for the Center for Science and Culture. Thanks for coming on the show today, Dr. Miller.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So there was a recent article by Winston Ewart and Robert Marks on the topic of coevolution in biocomplexity. Their article built on their previous work, which was summarized in the book they wrote along with Bill Dembski on the limitations of evolutionary algorithms. Dr. Miller has written an article for Evolution News, which summarized their book, and he also recently finished an article on the coevolution article. Dr. Miller, what is an evolutionary algorithm?
Well, an evolutionary algorithm is a method for solving problems which mimics the process of biological evolution. Now, an illustration for that would be, imagine you're trying to produce a better sports car. So what you do is you create a computer program that models the efficiency of sports cars. So perhaps you want better gas mileage, perhaps you want better turn rates or whatever. So what you do is you choose several variables which can vary in your simulation. So you might vary the size of the wheels, the shape of the exterior, the rate of gas flow into the engine. Now, what your algorithm does is it produces many trial car solutions with randomly adjusted variables. So some wheels are larger, some are smaller, some the outside is more aerodynamic, and so forth. And what happens is you have some sort of way of testing which of your trials is better than the others. You have some function which, let's say, determines the best quote-unquote fitness. And what happens is you keep running the simulation so that each generation, you create some trials, you test the trials for their fitness, and based on the fitness value that you obtain, you keep some of those trials and you throw out others, and then you make adjustments and more random changes as time goes on. So it's just like evolution. The idea is that you should be getting better and better fitness over time. Now, the simulation stops when you arrive at a solution which meets some minimum criteria for fitness or a solution that meets your desires.
What did the work of Ewart, Marks, and Dembski demonstrate about these algorithms' limitations?
Well, these algorithms work very nicely to improve existing designs. It's called optimization. But they can never do anything truly innovative. So for instance, the algorithm I talked about can help take a sports car and make it have better gas mileage, make it run more efficiently, perhaps to turn on a track more quickly. But this sort of algorithm can never turn, let's say, a car into a helicopter. We can't do true innovation. Now, the challenge is that these algorithms are only capable of finding targets is if information about the given target is programmed into the search routines. So for instance, the example I gave, the search algorithm has to know a lot about the aerodynamics of sport cars or the engineering of sports cars so it can decide what's a better car than another. Now, what happened is the author showed that absolute limits are placed on the algorithm's ability by what are called no free lunch theorems, or also what's described as the conservation of information. And the basic idea is no algorithm is better on average of solving a given set of problems than a random search unless information about a target is programmed into it. And this sort of information is called active information. That's the pre-programmed information in the search routines. Now, let me give you an example. Let's imagine a person is trying to guess a famous person. And what happens is they have no knowledge of who this person is. So it doesn't matter what method they use to search for this target. They could search by a last name, so you start with A's and go to Z's, or by date of birth, or by genre. And there's no reason to believe that one search strategy is better than another. However, imagine someone gives you information beforehand, such as the actor likes science fiction shows, or the actor was contemporary. This information or active information helps to narrow your search to more efficiently find your target. So again, what happens is all evolutionary algorithms are only capable of finding either the solutions to very simple problems or complex problems if active information is given.
What is coevolution and why is it relevant to this discussion?
Well, let me talk about coevolution from a biological perspective. That might be easier to understand. The idea is that if you look at the fitness of some organism, like let's say a sheep, that fitness is not simply determined by the characteristics of the sheep, like the amount of wool it has, how fast it can run. But it's also determined by other organisms that might be in the environment. So if you have predators like wolves, that's going to put selective pressures on the sheep. So what's a better sheep or a worse sheep will depend upon what other organisms are around it. That's called coevolution, because the evolution of one organism is dependent upon what other organisms are in the environment. Or coevolution could relate to quickly changing conditions in the environment, like is it a hot summer or a cold summer? Is it wetter or less wet in the environment? Now, another example of coevolution is a more of like symbiotic relationships. Like for instance, if you have flowers and honeybees, what happens is the two will co-evolve. So flowers want to evolve to have sweeter nectar, to have color patterns that attract honeybees. In the same sense, honeybees want to evolve to be able to identify which flowers have the sweetest nectar. So the flowers evolve to attract honeybees, and the honeybees evolve in such a way to go towards those flowers. Also, honeybees which have more hairs on their legs will tend to pick up more pollen from the flowers. And if a honeybee picks up more pollen, it's good for the flowers because they can reproduce more, but it's also good for the honeybee because they have more food supply. So again, the two organisms will evolve together. That's the idea of coevolution.
And something similar takes place in evolutionary algorithms?
Sure. So what happens, as in biology, a coevolutionary computer algorithm is created which adds these additional layers of complexity which relate to the interactions with individuals or with other factors. So these interactions, what they do is they cause the fitness of an individual with some set of characteristics to become less certain than with traditional evolutionary algorithms. Because in traditional algorithms, the fitness of an individual simply depends on the characteristics of that individual. But in a coevolutionary algorithm, it depends on other factors, like other individuals or other circumstances. Now, if you think in terms of what I would call a fitness landscape, and that's if you imagine a graph where the xy-axis represents all possible solutions that you could have, and the vertical direction, the z-direction, determines its fitness. So it creates sort of this fitness landscape, much like you're trying to walk through the mountain range, and higher altitude represents better fitness. Now, in a normal evolutionary algorithm, these fitness landscapes are fixed. They don't change with time. But in a coevolutionary process, what happens is that they can change with time. So what's originally a mountain could become a valley, or a mountain might move to the left or the right or forward or backwards. So the idea is that these landscapes change with time, which creates greater complexity. Now, here's the key idea. The idea is that coevolutionary algorithms can bypass the no free lunch theorems because they can somehow provide active information to find distant targets, or perhaps they can bypass the need for this active information. So essentially the idea is that coevolutionary algorithms can find distant targets in easier ways than evolutionary ones can.
What did Ewart and Mark's article demonstrate about coevolutionary processes?
Well, what they studied and talked about in their biocomplexity article is they looked at the efficiency of different coevolutionary algorithms for different problems and compared them to traditional evolutionary algorithms. And what they found is that the different coevolutionary strategies performed at best as well as their traditional counterparts, and they very often performed worse. Now, what these results indicate is that they cannot overcome the no free lunch limitations. So they also are, on average, no better than random searches for solving different problems. And most importantly, they also need active information about desired targets to produce anything beyond trivial results.
How are these conclusions relevant to evolutionary theory?
Well, here's the key. The no free lunch theorems suggest that evolutionary mechanisms, natural selection and all the other possible ones that one could imagine, are limited to improving existing features on animals, but they cannot generate complex adaptations without outside information directing their search. So the hope of evolutionists was that coevolutionary processes would overcome these limitations and help direct evolution towards distant targets. However, the research in this paper dampens these hopes. So let me use some practical examples. I talked about the idea of how insects or bees and flowers can co-evolve and their interactions can help direct their changes. However, if you look at this co-evolutionary process, it only produces trivial changes. So let's say a bee might have selective pressures to produce more hairs on its legs because of the flowers, or a flower might have selective pressures to produce more nectar. But that's a huge difference between producing an insect in the first place from something that was different, like a millipede. So what happens is if you want major innovations, such as evolving insects in the first place, that requires massive reengineering, which must begin in the earliest stages of development. This has been talked about more in detail by people like Steve Meyer in his book, Darwin's Dilemma. Now, the problem is all observed changes which affect these early stages are harmful to organisms and typically fatal. In other words, co-evolutionary processes can create small changes, but to re-alter the basic design of any organism requires mutations in the basic body plan, and those mutations are always harmful and typically fatal, or else the mutations are simply ignored and nothing happens. Now, if we think about the language I used before of a fitness landscape, what happens is different body plans, like an insect versus a millipede, are like mountains that are separated by distant caverns where the mountains have very steep cliffs on every side. Now, if you go to the top of the mountain, like let's say the top of the insect mountain, what happens is there you have a complex fitness terrain, and that's where coevolution can work very nicely. So the terrain can change, you can have insects that develop more hairs on their legs, but all of that takes place at the top of these mountains. So coevolution is very limited. What happens to go from one mountain to another mountain requires, again, enormous amounts of information that have to be provided beforehand. So coevolutionary processes cannot drive macroevolution. Again, it requires intelligent design.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Dr. Miller.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This has been Sarah Chaffee for ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.